And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you, and Joseph Cooper will be returning soon. Many lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transsexual students experience bullying and bias at home, in high school, and in college. Often this results in their dropping out of school, and sadly, this community also reports significantly higher suicide rates. Education helps empower the LGBT community and reduce the social stigma and prejudice that LGBT individuals often experience. Point Foundation is our nation's largest scholarship-granting organization for students of merit, and by identifying and supporting these scholars, Point hopes to provide a greater level of acceptance, respect, and tolerance for all persons regardless of sexual orientation. Joining us now is George Valencia. He's the executive director and CEO of Point Foundation. He also served as the director of external affairs for the U.S. Small Business Administration during the Clinton administration. He joins us by phone from Los Angeles. Welcome, George.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Of course.
Okay, and also with us, we have two 2013 recipients of Point Scholarships and Mentoring. In the studio, we're joined by Nick Waltrip. Nick hails from Miami. He's currently in pre-med studies at Florida State University, soon to be moving to UNC Chapel Hill. Welcome to you, Nick, and thanks for coming in.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. And we will have another Point scholar shortly, Mira Patel. But before we do, and before we can introduce her, we're getting her on the phone now. George, before we delve into Point Foundation and their enormous financial and spiritual philanthropy, I'd like to begin with your personal story. You grew up in a Latino and Mormon family in Texas, and you faced your own challenges and isolation. So tell us about your early years, if you would.
I guess when people hear that, they think, wow, that's a lot of strikes, Texas, Latino, and Mormon. But, you know, in the end, it makes one more resilient. And I'm very happy with the way things have ultimately turned out. But, you know, I'm 51. I grew up at a time when, especially in a Mormon family and Latino family, the idea of being different just wasn't, I couldn't identify it at the time, you know. I had family love, of course, as their child, but I just didn't know why I was different. And it really, I didn't come out until I moved to Washington, D.C., and for the first time saw a very different face on the LGBT community and was able to identify with individuals at that point. And like many young people today, still, sadly, it was difficult for my family. And it was mostly because they didn't understand. And that's what happens in our community. You grow up many times in a family or a society where people that even love you don't know how to guide you in this, you know, in this individuality and in who you are. So it took some time, but through education, my family's come around and they've been great.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm just wondering, because you went to Provo, Utah to attend Brigham Young University, and did being a Mormon, had you not lost your faith as a Mormon, or did you maintain that throughout?
You know, BYU has come a long way. I'm actually surprised that they have an LGBT group on campus now. But certainly when I was going there, that wasn't the case. And I have to say that at the time, I didn't know what that difference was in me. Some individuals are very good at identifying early on. I knew I was different. I didn't know who to identify with, you know, growing up in terms of being different. And so going to BYU, I formed a group of friends. It's interesting to see how many of them are gay now, but it was never really talked about. In terms of my faith, you know, I always believed that there was a loving God and that there was a reason why I was the way I was, and it wasn't a God of fear that I saw, but one that would love me for who I am.
Let's turn to Nick Waltrip. Nick, welcome. Tell us about your journey. You had hardships. You had an Irish father who was an alcoholic. You had an immigrant Cuban mother. Mm-hmm. What hardships did you have?
Well, my parents divorced when I was one. So growing up, I didn't really have much of a father figure. He's been an alcoholic, honestly, since I could remember. So after the divorce and I would go over, he would pick us up around 8, and like by 1, he would be either drunk or just not emotionally available. So he would leave us with my stepmother. And she was a piece of work. There was like multiple things that would happen. She like tried to drown me in the pool. I've come home with like my head shaved, and my mom would freak out. And me and my sister were always scared of her. So really going to my dad's house was more of like a chore than a joy. So yeah, and then on top of that, like around high school, I started to come to terms with my sexuality and kind of figure out where that all fit with the hardships that were already there. So it kind of like dragged me through the mud. And about, I would say sophomore and junior year, I was just like really depressed and like really suicidal. I'd go to bed at night like hoping I would like not wake up the next day. And but I finally, around senior year, I got the courage to come out to my mom, to which she responded, yeah, I already know, like most mothers. I mean, not to say it was obvious, because for the most part, most people think I'm fairly masculine. But I mean, I was a cheerleader. I was a dancer. And I mean, my whole family knew, my sisters knew, my mom knew, and they all took it fairly well. And I think most of the strain of me coming out, not so much came from them coming to terms with it, but them not knowing how, I guess how to help. They didn't know like what resources to give me, what, like how much love or what they could possibly do. So it wasn't so much them coming to terms with my sexuality. It was them trying to be there and not knowing how.
And in school itself, how was that for you? I mean, did you experience bullying? Did you?
The bullying stemmed not so much from being gay, so much as being a cheerleader, honestly. For the most part, I was, I wouldn't say popular, but I was very involved in school. I was vice president of my class, secretary of student council. So I was always very involved, and I was, I guess you would say, facey in my public and like school community. So it was never a point of, I was never necessarily bullied for being gay itself. I actually found Miami community to be quite accepting of being, of my sexuality, but it was more internal struggles. It was me coming to terms with what I didn't want to be and me trying to act straight. And, you know, trying to have a girlfriend that failed miserably. And,
okay.
Yeah.
So when you say you were suicidal through high school, it was more just your internal struggles.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't external at all. Like, I was never bullied. It was just me not wanting to come to terms with my situation.
George, we don't have Mira Patel yet. Oh, we do have Mira? Oh, well, let me introduce before we, then we will turn our attention to Point Foundation. We're joined by another Point scholar, Mira Patel. Mira is a graduate of Wellesley College, worked for then-Senator Hillary Clinton and then-Secretary of State Clinton. As one of the few openly gay women of color in the Obama administration, she established and conceived of the Global Equality Fund to further support LGBT human rights. Mira is currently an MBA student at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, and she joins us from NPR in Washington. Welcome, Mira.
Hi, Bonnie. How are you?
Hi. Well, thanks. I'm glad you could make it.
Yes, I'm happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about you. Your resume is so impressive. You've accomplished so much. If you could just give us a little background on you and a little about your journey.
Yeah, well, it's just, I think coming out stories for everyone are very individual, and it's always great to hear about other people's journey through that process. I actually came out at Wellesley College and was lucky enough to be supported by a really strong and empowering community while I was there. Unfortunately, I lost my family support in the process. And for me, college was something that gave me the tools to be able to move forward in the world, to be able to work in public policy, which I love, and to be lucky enough to further human rights for women and LGBT people and refugees in the Senate and then at the State Department. And I'm now at Wharton focusing on public-private partnerships and social innovation. So looking at the ways we can use the tools of the private sector to further economic empowerment, human rights, and social justice, both here in the United States and around the world.
When you say you lost the support of your family, that was in college?
That was. It was my my first semester in college. And it was a very difficult time, but I think that it's been over a decade. And, you know, for me, I think having the support of Wellesley allowed me to be sort of open and to be who I was. And I think part of what Point's been able to do for me is to teach me how to be an out leader, how to operate in areas that may not be as supportive, or they may not have as many out LGBT leaders, whether that's in the public sector or in the private sector.
Before we take a break, I want to go back to you, George, and turn our attention to Point Foundation now. Give us a little history about how and why it was founded.
Sure. We're in our 13th year of existence. We were founded in 2001, and really the reason for its founding was that one of the founders himself had experienced rejection from his family when he came out, and he was in school at the time. And he was left, just on his own to work. He had a high level of commitment to his academics, and, all of his time was spent really on that particular piece, making sure that he could get through school. When he got to graduate school, he really sought the help of a mentor, and in the process found a gentleman by the name of Sol Price, and he and his family became very influential in his life, and together with Sol Price, they founded the Price Club. And one of the things that he wanted to do was create an organization, found an organization that would alleviate some of the burdens he had gone through as a young person, so financial help, mentoring. And one of the things that Sol Price taught him is that it's important to give back to the community that helps you, and that's another component of Point Foundation, that our scholars engage in community service projects every year that they're a Point Scholar.
Okay, we're going to continue with the Point Foundation, but it's a good little moment to take a break on today's Topical Currents. We're speaking with George Valencia, the Executive Director and CEO of Point. Mira Patel and Nick Waltrip are two 2013 Point Scholars. Please stay with us and we'll return. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you, and we're talking about LGBT issues. We have more to come in the program, but now we're visiting with George Valencia, the Executive Director and CEO of Point Foundation. It's the nation's largest scholarship-granting organization for LGBT students of merit, and two of the Point Scholars, Mira Patel and Nick Waltrip. So, George, tell us about the mentoring program and the scholarships. You do much more than provide financial assistance to your scholars. And tell us about the mentorship program, its importance, and what it takes to be a Point Scholar.
Of course. We have always seen Point Foundation, as you said, much more than just a scholarship. And when I say that, I mean more than just the financial assistance. And one of the things, as I said earlier, that has been very important to not only the founder, but to also our organization and our scholars, is a mentoring program. In fact, I would say that a good 80% to 90% of the individuals that apply for Point Scholarship, including our finalists, mention that that is probably the most attractive piece of what we offer and what they're looking for. And especially when you hear about what Nick was saying and, his family not knowing how to provide those resources, and my own personal story and Mira's, what we find is that having someone to guide you not only in your professional but at times in your personal life in the community navigate through that is really important. And so our scholarships provide the financial support. They provide leadership training. They provide mentorship. And what we do with our mentorship program is we assess what an individual that's going to become a Point Scholar is looking for in a mentorship. What we find is that typically as they get to their junior and senior years, and certainly our graduate students, what they're seeking more than anything else is some guidance through their professional career. And what we do then is we find an individual in their area that probably is in the same field that they're looking to eventually have a professional career in, and we match them up. And, the hope is that together they come up with a good idea of what a community service project should look like, and they work on that together. And that, we're in a very good position in that we always have a lot more individuals wanting to be mentors than we actually have scholars to provide.
Hmm.
And so we do have a pool of great individuals that are helpful.
And how do you choose your scholars? You must get a lot of applications. What are the qualifications for a point scholar?
We do get a lot of applications. It probably starts with about 5,000 individuals seeking a point scholarship. And of those, I would say probably about 2,000 to 2,500 really come through with all of the required paperwork and meet the deadlines. And then it just, you know, the process itself takes us down to selecting anywhere from 20 to 25 scholars in any given year. And so you're really looking, not to put them on the spot here, but you're looking at the best of the best here. And what we look for is a commitment to academics. And so we look at GPA. We look to see that they, you know, care to do well in that and they've had a commitment towards that. We also look at leadership participation and also the leadership potential. We understand that at times, given where someone's from, the opportunities might not be as prevalent as in other areas. And then we look for a need, you know, what type of need they're requiring that we can provide.
And how does one apply to become a Point Scholar?
They simply need to go to our website, pointfoundation.org, and the application process begins in December of every year.
Okay.
And it goes through about the end of January, early February. And it's a two-part application process. And throughout the course of it, depending on the different, you know, semifinalists, if that's the case, or phone interviews, it just works its way. And we continue to ask for more things like letters of recommendation when they get to be a semifinalist, transcripts and such.
And Nick, tell us about your experience as a Point Scholar. Has that transformed your life?
Well, I think more than anything, what it's provided is possibilities. I mean, my mom's always stressed school and the importance of school. And with me and my two older sisters, if we didn't gain scholarships and if we didn't find our own means of really paying for college, we probably wouldn't go to college or would end up in community college just because you know, the divorce was rough. We lived paycheck to paycheck, and money was never abundant. So I never thought I'd ever go to FSU or even UNC Chapel Hill, for that matter. So
And you're pre-med?
Pre-med, yes. Well, I'm majoring psychology and biology, double major. And I am on a pre-med track as of now, yes.
And Mira, how were you introduced to Point?
I first found out about the Point Foundation when I was living in Washington, D.C. and working in public policy. I had met some Point scholars who were involved in medicine, in politics, and in community organizing, and they suggested I look at it. I actually wasn't aware that Point funds graduate students as well, and for me, one of the reasons I had been waiting to go to graduate school is because I really didn't have the resources to pay for it, but what I loved about Point as well was that it provided the leadership training that I think I needed to be an out woman in business. I didn't know any other people like that, and I'd say in addition to the professional aspects, personally, I needed a family. I didn't have one in the same way that a lot of other people do. And I think I can't tell you how much it's meant to have a number of supportive adults just say, we're proud of you, we support you, how can we help? And it's something that's intangible and that you don't quite realize you continue to need as you get older and move forward professionally, but also personally.
Do you feel that your life is an inspiration to others? Do you consider yourself a role model?
You know, I think I've been really lucky. I've been able to go to a wonderfully supportive college. I've worked at jobs where I've been able to be out in the workplace. I think that what I would love to do is be able to translate my experience to have everybody consider the possibilities, as Nick said, the possibility that you can go to college, that you can go to graduate school, that you can be out and proud, and that it's not a detriment, but that, in fact, people will look at you as a person who has integrity and is able to not only be yourself in the workplace, but to be the best person you can be personally and professionally. And I do think having that visible leadership really helps, and that's why it's been so important to have mentors and other senior people through Point turn to us and say, how can we help? But also I think I love it about Point, and it reminds me a lot of Wellesley College, is part of it is ingrained, how can I give back? what can I do? You know, I've been given this gift. How can I pay that forward to someone who may not have had all the privileges I've had in terms of education and access?
Are you still, you haven't reunited with your family, I take it from...
I haven't, no. My parents aren't in my life. And I think, you know, I was raised in a very conservative immigrant family. And I think I was given a lot of gifts in terms of having education always being a priority. And so I use that as a tool to sort of pull myself forward. I wish they could be. I don't think many people, having gone through this experience, don't have a kernel of hope within them that things will get better, that things will turn around.
Right.
But one of the things I've learned as I've gotten older is I have to find and develop, really cultivate my own family moving forward. And whether that's me as a single individual or also me as a future parent and partner, and being able to create a positive and empowering experience for my children and for them to be able to be proud of me as an out person in the world.
Nick, what were your greatest obstacles? And do you feel it's a kinder, gentler place right now, our society?
I'm not sure about kinder or gentler, but it's definitely reassuring just to see. I mean, growing up, there was never gay role models. And when I did start to figure out that I was gay, it was always... lingering in the back of my mind, like, yes, I want to be a doctor, but can I be a doctor and gay? And the beauty of POINT was, I always saw it as this handicap. And when I went to the conference in D.C. last year for the first time, it was amazing to see all these young, successful people who were doctors, who were lawyers, who were business people and teachers, and who happened to be gay or lesbian or transgendered or queer. And it was just really reassuring and empowering to know that, you know, being gay was just another facet of who I was. It wasn't necessarily my defining characteristic,
right,
and that I can do these things in spite of that.
George, what are your feelings about the current administration vis-a-vis, you know, the LGBT community, President Obama's administration?
I don't think we can thank him enough, I have to say. Yeah, there are always bumps along the way, but there's so many different people to try to please or appease, but I think the track record that we've been experiencing, and certainly with gay marriage and just that in and of itself has just beyond my wildest dreams. I never thought in my lifetime I'd see that, and I don't think there's been a bigger advocate for us than the president.
We're going to get an update on the state of Florida's state of gay marriage later in the program. We have more guests coming. But I wanted to ask you, George, I saw on your website tomorrow is the inaugural Educate to Impact Day. And I want to know more about that and what you want to accomplish.
Sure. It's interesting. It's almost like a domino effect when you look at the statistics and you've heard some of the experiences here. Of just, you know, sometimes the difficulty of getting support when you're in high school, and it's one of those things that at times that bullying can lead to suicide, sadly, and it's no surprise that when you look at the number of young people that drop out of high school to escape the harassment or violence that they're feeling there, that it's three times the national average. So it's very high. And the reality is that when you look at somebody that gets a higher education, I mean, those are the ones that, of course, are going to, you know, get higher incomes. They're healthier. They have lower rates of unemployment and poverty. And one of the things that we're trying to accomplish tomorrow through our Educate to Impact Day is the fact that everyone is deserving of access to education and the importance of graduating from high school and from college.
And I just want to give that website is educate2impact.org. And we will have a link to that and pointfoundation.org on our website. And I want to go back to you for a minute, Mira, because I think we both read the same op-ed article in Sunday's New York Times about the lack of openly gay chief executives in business. Did you read that?
I did read it.
What are your thoughts on that? And as a student in Wharton, do you hope to change that landscape?
I hope so. You know, I think what's interesting is that the question of LGBT equality has already been settled for the next generation. When I got my acceptance call from Wharton, I was actually standing on the steps of the Supreme Court when the Edie Windsor marriage equality decision came down. Mm. And I was still in college when Lawrence v. Texas was on the books, or the anti-sodomy laws in states across this country were still on the books. It was still illegal to be gay in this country. And so I think having sort of gone through that sea change educationally, it really made me think hard about what I was doing in business school. I'm actually co-president of our LGBT club on campus, and one of the things that surprised me most about my MBA program was just how supportive allies are on campus. It's the largest club on campus. We have over 500 students, and Wharton actually has the most openly LGBT students. And I think that it's only a matter of time before all of those students start taking on leadership roles at companies. But it's something that I think is challenging because it's asking not only people in the workplace to be supportive, but also to make sure that regulations that are on the books, and a lot of companies are fantastic in terms of the rules and regulations on their books, but have a much more difficult time thinking through what enacting them means when inherently your goal is to make more money. And I imagine that's going to evolve as the relationship between the public and private sectors become more melded, when companies see that they have to move forward in a manner that includes sort of shared value, that fundamental progress, fundamental profit in the 21st century means being inclusive of employees and their dignity in the workplace.
We're speaking about LGBT issues. We're going to expand the conversation momentarily with George Valencia, the executive director and CEO of Point Foundations, the nation's largest scholarship-granting organization for LGBT students of merit, and also with two of their 2013 scholars, Nick Waltrip and Mira Patel. And we want to now introduce the co-founder of Equality Florida and the deputy director of Equality Florida. His name is Stratton Pollitzer, and he joins us in the studio. Welcome, Stratton.
It's great to be here, Bonnie.
Thanks so much for coming in. Let's stick with education just for the moment before we get to the other issues that we're going to cover. What's going on? You said there are things going on specifically in Dade and Broward, anti-bullying in the school district's measures.
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of incredible pioneering work done in Florida to protect lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender students. Equality Florida is a statewide organization, but we've focused on partnering with Broward and Dade because these two school districts in particular are so invested in creating a safe and supportive environment for LGBT students. And they have put together some of the most innovative and robust programs really anywhere in the country. Just as a couple of examples, in Miami-Dade, there is a sexual minority youth network that every single high school and middle school has a liaison for LGBT students who gets a full day of training on LGBT issues every single month. And in Broward County, they've developed a landmark resource for school principals, administrators, and staff, a 56-page guide to all of the things that schools need to be doing to protect and support this at-risk population. And what's been for us at Equality Florida the most exciting piece of all is that Broward and Dade very unselfishly want to share what they've learned with the rest of our state. And together with Palm Beach County earlier this year, they co-hosted a gathering inviting all school districts across Florida to send senior personnel, the kinds of folks who can shift the climate in their district, the kinds of decision makers who can implement new policies, to come to a two-day conference up in Palm Beach County. And in just the first year, they had 20 school districts attend. And it was
from the state.
From the state. Just 20 of Florida's 67 school districts in the first year alone. And they came from Pensacola, Jacksonville, Key West, Madison, Fort Myers. I mean, little districts, large districts, medium-sized districts. It's really exciting to see.
Tell us more about Equality Florida. What else are you doing?
So Equality Florida is the statewide LGBT advocacy organization. We have almost 200,000 members across the state of Florida. It's just an incredibly exciting time. Everyone, you know, you turn on the television, you can't go a day, it seems, without another headline. Right now in Florida, there is a fierce fight for marriage equality. There are half a dozen lawsuits in the courts right now Some of them are to have marriages performed in other states be legally recognized here. Mm-hmm. Equality Florida is part of a lawsuit with the National Center for Lesbian Rights that would actually, if successful, provide same-sex couples with the right to marry right here in the Sunshine State. I've been with my partner for 20 years, and I'd like to marry him here in Florida. This is our home. So that's very exciting. I think the other piece, though, and it's the story that we just have to tell over and over again, is the role Florida can play right now in the national gay rights movement. Because when you look at the United States, what you see is 30 states where at the state level we have achieved a great deal in terms of, I'm sorry, 20 where we've achieved a great deal in terms of passing state policy, and then 30 where we've achieved almost nothing through our state government's action. And the reason we haven't moved in those other 30 states, and Florida is one of them, is that no one has figured out how to make this a truly bipartisan issue with right. Democrats and Republicans standing together. And Florida has the opportunity to be that breakthrough state where the legislation that we're pursuing that would make it illegal to fire LGBT people in Florida this year achieved 10 Republican co-sponsors standing with Democrats in putting their name on this bill. That's unprecedented in our country.
This is this pro-LGBT law that you're talking about.
Right. So this is a law that would change Florida's civil rights code to make it illegal to fire LGBT people, evict us from our homes, or deny us service in a restaurant.
Based on your
sexual orientation. Or gender identity. Exactly. And part of the reason that's gaining so much momentum is that major corporations in Florida are standing behind it. Now, almost 20 of Florida's largest employers, Disney World, CSX, Wells Fargo, Citibank, JetBlue, big companies everyone's familiar with, are pushing for this to pass. And the reason is they know that as long as Florida has a reputation for intolerance, we're at a competitive disadvantage to hold on to the best and the brightest workforce. I mean, we're hearing from these brilliant young people, you know, we want Nick to come home from Chapel Hill to Florida and start his career here. We don't want him to feel like he's got to move to a state where he can get married, where when he puts that wedding photo on his desk, he's not going to get fired or get passed over for a promotion because he's got a homophobic boss or manager.
Well, Nick, speaking of that, the reason you're transferring to UNC, University of North Carolina, Chapel mm-hmm. Hill, was because of financial aid?
Funding, yes. There was actually, surprisingly, my first year as a senior in high school, I applied to many schools and I was kind of deterred from looking out of state just because I thought financial aid would be a problem. And I was really surprised applying as a transfer to UNC Chapel Hill. I'm paying much less for tuition at the University of North Carolina than I would be at FSU. So a lot of students, I guess, are deterred from like looking out of state just because they think the amounts are going to be exorbitant or just completely out of hand. But, I mean, a lot of private and out-of-state schools, depending on their endowment and how much money they get funded by the state, will provide you with more money than possibly your school in-state.
And Mira was talking about the environment at Wharton for LGBT students. What was it like or what is it like at FSU?
I mean, it is the South. It,
what does that
admittedly,
mean?
I mean, there's always, especially in a modern, in this modern era, there's always going to, there's already this kind of precedent of acceptance and integration. And there's a really just the pressure to accept the LGBT community. But I am in a fraternity. And you do kind of see in like just very small ways, and they're subtle, but you see it. I'm homophobia and kind of my brothers, I guess, kind of forget that I'm gay. And when the topic comes up, they'll make a comment. And then I will, like, retort. And they kind of cringe because they forget. So, I mean, I definitely think it's changing. It's becoming more comfortable. And a topic that's more, I guess, easily talked about mm-hmm. in a family dynamic. But, mm-hmm. I mean, it's still changing. And it's still gonna, I think it's going to be a while. But for the most part, I would say the war is won and it's on its way. But I think it's a matter of letting the dust settle and everything to sort out. And, everyone's to kind of like be born into this like new age of acceptance and
right.
It'll be a while, but I think we're getting there.
Okay, so things are getting better.
They are, yes.
George, what are the advocacy, tell us more about the advocacy efforts on the part of the Point Foundation and the scholars.
It's interesting because when we look at ourselves in terms of advocacy, really our advocacy is our commitment to our scholars, because every single one of them, we're supporting 78 scholars right now and just selected our class for next year, which we'll be announcing next month. We support them in their own advocacy work. So really, when you look at our scholars involved in transgender rights, you're looking at some that start their own, initiatives to change some of the textbooks in their universities to be inclusive of LGBTQ families. So really, that's where our advocacy work goes. We have begun participating in a variety of different initiatives that really are going to address more of the school safety. And really, also, we forget that in college, there are issues associated with that, whether it's in a sports program, whether it's even just violence in general, and we want to make sure that its environment is safe for our scholars, regardless of who they are. So we're beginning those efforts as well.
We're speaking with George Valencia, the executive director and CEO of Point Foundation, the nation's largest scholarship-granting organization for LGBT students of merit. Also, two scholars from Point Foundation, Mira Patel and Nick Waltrip. And also, we're in the studio with Stratton Pulitzer. He's the deputy director and co-founder of Equality Florida on today's Topical Currents. We need to take a short break, and we'll return. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you, and George Valencia, the executive director and CEO of Point Foundation. Mira Patel and Nick Waltrip are two Point scholars, and also Stratton Pulitzer is the co-founder and deputy director of Equality Florida. Stratton, during the break, I asked you, what else is going on? Is the fight over in Florida? I mean, where are we?
No, it's definitely not over. Okay. And, Nick said a couple of things that I thought were really powerful. He talked about the fact that there is this lingering culture of homophobia in our schools, and yet there is this sense that we are going to win this. And there's no doubt that folks who support full equality for the LGBT community have the advantage, and that the tide is moving in our direction. But it's also true that in some ways it's all uphill from here, because we've got to win not just in blue states, but all over this country. And the South is really counting on Florida to be a breakthrough in the region. Because one of the things about LGBT youth is there are just as many of them born into families in Mississippi or my home state of South Carolina as there are in California and New York. And we've got to keep fighting for them. And the biggest mistake we could make in this moment is to lean back and believe that gravity will take us the rest of the way. That will lead to several more decades of really having two countries, the have and the have-not states, in terms of LGBT equality. So this is the moment we need everybody who cares about this issue to show up every day, talk about it on your Facebook page, join a community organization, get involved, know where your elected officials stand on this, make that important to how you vote, because what happens in the next year or two in Florida is going to have a huge impact on our success here, but it's also critical to the rest of the country, and particularly to the South. And that was the other piece when Nick said, yes, Florida really is the South.
Right.
And I as a South Floridian, we can think that culturally we're somehow special status and a little separate from the South, but politically and culturally, we really are a Southern state. And we need to embrace that identity so that when we win, the story that will be told is that the South has changed and that Florida is leading that fight.
And where does it stand with gay marriage right now?
So there are these six lawsuits that are moving through the courts. The case that Equality Florida is a part of, there was a filing for summary judgment recently, which means that we have asked, the National Center for Lesbian Rights has asked the court to basically rule a prima facie case that says there's overwhelming evidence that the constitutional ban in Florida violates the federal constitution and we have to allow these couples to marry. Now, we have seen judges across the country mm-hmm. take that same position, as recently
Oregon.
As yesterday in Oregon, right?
Yeah.
And and in conservative states and progressive states alike. So, but the problem with lawsuits is they are unpredictable. People have been calling me asking if they can plan a wedding in Florida in December, and that's a little premature.
A little soon.
But we are very hopeful. I mean, the legal arguments are very clearly in our favor.
Okay, we're going to join now. Let me just do this. Okay. Also joining us now is Tony Lima. He's the executive director of SAVE, that's formerly SAVE-DADE, Safeguarding American Values for everyone. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be on with you today.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. Why did you change the name from Save Dade to Save?
Well, Save was actually the original name of the organization when it was established 21 years ago. And in a way, it's to pay homage to that. And also, we've been working not just in Miami-Dade County. We've been doing work in Monroe County, and we've been pushing into Broward slowly but surely. And we also have a presence in Tallahassee. I'm often with State Representative David Richardson speaking about the issues that we have in South Florida with the LGBT community. So it's much more than just Saving Dade. We're much more of a South Florida-based organization, and I wanted to make sure that that was noted.
So what other efforts? I see that you have this Springtime Freedom. It's an anti-bullying showcase. It's this Wednesday evening at the Homestead Senior High School in South Dade.
Yes. We've been working with a really talented young teacher who is gay, Aaron Bosloon, who started a very, very important GSA in the Homestead area back at the end of the year of 2013. And from there, he's also built successful GSAs at Northwestern High School, Central High School, and Edison High School, which are, inner city schools where the idea of a GSA is something that's novel. So this young man is working.
GSA is?
A Gay Straight Alliance. So okay. It's a school-based club that's inclusive of, the LGBT students, but also their straight allies as well. So we've been working with him to build that GSA network, and this event tomorrow is actually a celebration of all of that, and we have the honor of also counting with Aaron Gruel, who is the teacher that Hilary Swank played in the film Freedom Riders, and she's really an amazing voice, very supportive of the LGBT community. So she's our special star, so to speak, tomorrow at this showcase at Homestead High School.
Okay, and is there information on your website on that?
Yes. Our website is, actually the website is still www.savedade.org. Okay. If you want more information on the event, please check it out. We're also doing a lot in Miami-Dade County to revisit the original human rights ordinance that we established 18 years ago that protects the lesbian, gay, and bisexual community. Well, we're revisiting it now, working with the county commission in order to include language for gender identity and expression. So it would include the transgender community or anyone that's gender nonconforming. So we've been working really hard on that. And also, about 3 months ago, we filed a federal lawsuit against the state, naming the governor and the attorney general, in order to fight for marriage recognition. So those same-sex couples that have been married in other states that live in Florida, their marriage rights need to be recognized. So it's important to be able to be part of that marriage equality fight in a little bit of a different way for those same-sex couples that are already married, and in the states that they're married in, and even federally, they're recognized as married couples, but they're not in the state of Florida.
Right. And Stratton Pollitzer, I don't know if you know everybody that's on the program right now with you. Are you familiar with everyone? Stratton Pollitzer is here.
Oh, I love Stratton. Stratton is a good friend.
Hey, Tony.
Hi, Stratton. I had no idea. It's nice to hear your voice on air.
Yeah, so you were talking about that, Stratton. The same thing.
Right, about the two lawsuits. And I think, actually, Tony brought up another topic that's really, I think, will be interesting to listeners. You know, the work right now to strengthen Miami-Dade's human rights ordinance is part of a legacy of doing local policy work that Florida has been enormously successful at passing domestic partner registries, non-discrimination ordinances, and safe schools policies at the local level. So while we haven't passed state laws yet, and we are approaching that tipping point, locally, Florida has passed 130 policies protecting LGBT people and recognizing our families. It's as many policies as the rest of the South combined. And it's one more reason that we really feel like we have to continue to lead this charge in the South.
As a role model for the
rest
of the South.
Definitely.
This pro-LGBT law you were talking about, where did that stand in the last legislative session?
Well, you could tell this story one of two ways. You could say that it died in committee without a hearing, which is true and frustrating. But I think the bigger story is the incredible bipartisan and business community support that gelled behind it. I mean, it really is unprecedented in this country to have 10 Republicans not just voting with Democrats on this issue, but going out on a limb and co-sponsoring it, including the primary co-sponsor from South Dade and the Keys, Holly Raschein, who's just been an absolute champion. So that is a new day. We have the votes to pass this right now if we could get it to the floor. Mm. So, you know, it's just a question of, and leadership basically stepped out of the way this year and said, we'll let the committee chairs decide. So now we have to put more pressure on them next year. But the maybe even bigger issue is this massive coalition of companies. You know, Winn-Dixie is another one of those companies, just to give you an idea of how broad this team of big Florida employers is.
That are backing it.
And they're not just saying we support this. They have formed a C4 organization chaired by the CEO of Florida Blue that is actively lobbying on this issue, and they are putting resources into it, and they are asking people running for office where they stand on this issue, because the business community recognizes, one, this is a real competitive disadvantage that Florida doesn't have these kinds of policies yet when they're trying to recruit from the Northeast or the West Coast, but also the huge opportunity. If we're first in the region, it will make us a talent magnet for people all over the South and all over the country. People want to live in Florida. We need to give them reasons to move here, right, not reasons to stay away.
Tony.
Well, definitely. And also, I just wanted to add to that really quickly.
Yes.
It also sends a message to the rest of the nation. As we all know, I mean, right now, the conversation is not only at a statewide level, but also the need to pass a federal ENDA so that there are protections on a national level. And the protections locally are great, but without that national protection overall, you know, local protections can often be repealed or opposed. So it's important, and I think that Stratton is right. You know, showing the strength in Florida could be very, very beneficial for us and set us, you know, apart from some of the other states that maybe aren't expanding as quickly as they should.
Tony, I realize you don't have much time, and it's actually just about the end of the program. Was there anything else you wanted to say? Springtime Freedom, an anti-bullying showcase tomorrow evening at the Homestead Senior High School.
Definitely, definitely. Please check out our website again, www.savedade.org. We also, I mean, Equality Florida and SAVE, we can't do the work that we do without volunteers and without help from the community at large. So it's important for anyone that's out there that feels that they want to be a part of everything amazing that's happening within the LGBT community to call us, to email us, to check out our websites and become volunteers or even donors. I mean, without the support of the community, we couldn't do the great work we all do.
And Equality Florida, your website, Stratton?
Is EQFL.org. EQFL is in Florida.org.
And you too are looking for volunteers, I presume.
Oh, you know it. There'll never be too many volunteers.
Okay. And George Valencia, Point Foundation, how are you funded?
We have some very generous corporate sponsors and some very generous individuals. And so it's really through foundations, corporations, and individuals who make it possible for us.
Okay, and your website is pointfoundation.org. And Nick Waltrip, I want to thank you so much for being with us.
I'm happy to be here.
Congratulations on
your
Point Scholarship.
Thank you.
Meera Patel, I'd like you to have the last word because it is the end of the program. Are you still there, Meera?
I am here.
There you are. Okay. What message would you like to, we're giving you the last word to convey to others who find themselves struggling at this point?
I think that the most important thing is to know that you're not alone, and it may feel like that, particularly if you're in a school where you may be the only LGBTQ person, where it may not be safe to openly identify that way. But know that there are resources out there. Point Foundation, Trevor Project, there are wonderful organizations that support LGBTQ youth. And know that as soon as you can get yourself to a point at which you can be out, there are so many resources and so many people that you don't even know yet who are willing and eager to invest themselves to help you develop as a person and as a leader. And it's something that I've been really grateful for, but I just can't wait to see what the people who are growing up under the current state of equality in our country and where it's currently evolving, to see where they go and what they have been, because I think that's really what not having any limits means, is endless possibility.
And that's Topical Currents for today. Thanks so much for joining us. We want to thank George Valencia, the Executive Director and CEO of Point Foundation, Mira Patel and Nick Waltrip are the 2013 Point Scholars, two of them. We also want to thank Stratton Pulitzer, the co-founder and Deputy Director of Equality Florida, along with Tony Lima, the Executive Director of SAVE. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow.